Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions.
Well, hello, everyone. I think I got this working. I'll be your host tonight, Eldon McFarling, and due to a few minor technical difficulties, they don't have the exact opening music that I was hoping I could play, but we'll get along without that. So I was the topic I wanted to cover tonight was winter fuels and how we can purchase winter fuels and use winter fuels and hopefully, you know, not break the bank and add to the bottom line. I got a little bit of just a little information I'll pass along to begin with. And I just did a little calling today to see what was available in the local area and what the pricing was. And what I found was interesting. I guess I kind of knew this, but people that handle the fuel, I mean, not just the girl behind the desk, but people that run some of these tank wagon outfits and, you know, really should know something about the fuel. They know very little about what they're handling and what they're selling. Generally, where I live here, right in the middle of the U.S., you can get number one diesel, straight number one, and you can get that in a road or off-road, dyed diesel for, you know, a lot of ag and, for instance, if you have a reefer or something, you can run the dyed diesel. Then they do have number two, ULSD. And some, they'll blend it, custom blend it, like on a tank wagon. Most of the truck stops have a choice for, you can buy the straight number two, or you can buy a winter blend, which right now is most of it was 50-50 blend, or you can buy straight number one. And let's see, I had one, there's one truck stop here that's treated their fuel, and that was the best deal on fuel here locally was to buy the straight number two that was already treated. Now, that was the only place that didn't raise their price when they winterized the fuel. Everyone else, the blend, price on the blend goes up quite a bit. This is what I had today. $329.9 for straight number two ULSD that's not untreated. 50-50 blend was $354.9. These are cash prices, by the way. So that's 25 cents a gallon higher. Number one ULSD was $369.9. So that's 40 cents a gallon higher. Now, I did a little math on this, and for the 50-50 blend, yet we're losing about 1% BTU content. The straight number two is right at 138,700. The 50-50 blend is right at 137,350. So about 1,350 BTUs per U.S. gallon less. So assuming if you can average 7 miles per gallon on straight number two, it takes about 19,814 BTUs per mile. But there's some other factors where you really lose a lot of mileage in the winter. So about all you can do is try and keep your fuel flowing. You know, if you're in a really cold area, you may have to go use the blend or even straight number one. And so if you extend it out, running the 50-50 blend would add about 4 cents a mile to your cost. Running straight number one would add about 6 cents a mile. And then if you factor in, you lose 1% BTU plus, you know, higher wind resistance, rolling resistance, idling, et cetera. Then it gets pretty costly. So I took that a little further. If you're running 2,500 miles a week, let's say you're spending 5 cents more on your fuel, and we have 8 weeks of really cold winter, that's $1,000. Now, where I think you can do better, and what I've done is set my truck up with a fuel heater. And I have more than one fuel heater. I kind of have a redundant system because when I did this, I was able to get a high concentrate of biodiesel. And that stuff would, you know, turn to Vaseline, you know, before the freezing temperature. So I had to have pretty good capacity to heat that. But I'm not really able to get that anymore, at least not at, you know, a price that makes it worth using, and I can't get it everywhere I go. So I just use straight number two. And the only time I treat it is because when I'm on the road, I don't have any problem. It keeps warm. I usually run in the south. Don't have any problem. But when I come home, that's where we often get to zero and below zero. And that's where I need to do something. So with my fuel water separator I put on, it has three different heat options. One of them is a 12-volt thermostatically controlled. So the minute you turn the key on, it starts heating the filter. Second option is a fluid heater, which takes either return fuel or coolant to run through the fuel heater. And that is also thermostatically controlled. And then my third option on the water separator is a heating element that I can plug in. And so I plug it in, keeping the filter warm, keep the block heater plugged in. When we start the truck, it starts to flow in there, and the filter's all warmed up, and you get good fuel flow. And then as soon as the engine warms up, we get warm fuel running back to the tank. It's not really problem. I haven't had any problems with gelling running straight number two. If I know it's going to be cold, I treat it right before I come home. But I don't treat the rest of the time I'm running, you know, I don't treat the fuel at all. So I haven't had any problem. What I also do is I take samples of when I fuel, you know, and I'm pretty lucky compared to a lot of people. I have a dedicated route, so I fuel at the same place all the time. But I take a sample, and I take samples all the time, and what I do is leave them sitting out in the cold. And so when I get up and walk out of the house, I can see that fuel sample. If it's gelled up, I know we're going to have a little trouble, and I got to get the truck warmed up good before hitting the road. And then I, you know, have a pretty good idea what to do there. So anyway, that's my opening information there, and we'll take some calls here and talk about ways to do it. But basically, if you treat your fuel with an additive, the cost, and if you buy it at the truck stop, I've noticed the same stuff that I buy at the truck stop is exactly double what I'm paying. and you're supposed to double the dosage when it's below zero. So at that rate, if you buy it at the truck stop, it costs you about 12, 13 cents a mile, which is another jolt. And you don't want to run, you know, too much of that. But if you can shop around, buy the stuff, it knocks it down to about 7 cents. And then normally above zero, it's about half that, so about 3.5 cents a mile if you run it continuously. But I'm interested in what everybody else has done. Like I say, if you add up your increase in fuel cost from running a blend and from running high doses of additives, a better way to use that money would be to buy yourself a fuel heater or a water separator with the fuel heater. And with that, you can generally run, you know, cut down on your additives or blends while you're running, and get better, higher BTU content out of your number two, better mileage, and so do better all around. So, anyway, don't have a call screener here. I'm going to do the live put you on the show deal, and we're going to go to 8699. And who have we got there?
Good afternoon, Eldon. It's Matt.
Howdy, Matt.
Rolling through the state of Georgia. Headed north where the weather is beautiful, I hear.
Well, it's a good place to visit, I hear.
Yeah. I've spoke to you before about this, and I think I've come up with my idea for when I'm sitting at home and worrying about, you know, the fuel gelling up by the truck's been parked for a couple of days, is they sell electric heating pads that are made basically for like an oil pan of a car. And, you know, you could epoxy glue, you could glue them right to the bottom of your fuel tank and plug that in, you know, the couple hours before you're going to take off, and your fuel should be warm inside the tank.
Yeah, and that's a very good idea. What was the wattage on that?
I haven't looked them up yet, but I mean, that's just something I heard about from a friend of mine that had put one on his car. For, you know, I live up in Minnesota where it gets good and cold some days.
Well, the thing there is putting it on the bottom of your fuel tank, and heat rises.
Yeah.
And you can put it right below your draw tube, which would be right where you need it. So you won't waste a lot of energy, you know, trying to heat up the rest of the tank. So that would be, I think that would probably be a good option. Now, what do you normally get for fuel where you're running?
Well, I don't put blended fuel in unless, you know, I know I have to. And unfortunately, a lot of times I don't know that because I run kind of a dedicated run too, where, you know, a lot of times I'll get home over the weekend or by Monday, and then I'll leave out again on Friday, and what the weatherman says is going to be happening at the end of the week and what actually happens are never the same. So I'll put blended fuel in just to be safe, but I honestly have no idea what most of it is. You know, most of the stations just have what they call winterized fuel. There are a few places I can get straight number one and make my own blend, but typically, I've just bought the winterized fuel, and even with that, I do have issues from time to time getting going until the truck's good and warm and returned enough fuel, you know?
Yeah, and I should have mentioned that for people that haven't had the pleasure of looking at gel fuel. what actually happens is, and going back to our original diesel fuel that we had for 100 years, it had a pretty high content of paraffin and some other compounds like that, and so those would turn to crystals at a certain temperature, you know, depending on the content, the BTU content of the fuel and so on. For instance, number one would gel at a lot lower temperature than number two, and then there's some other fuels that we don't really see, you know, number three, number four, these kind of real heavy fuels that railroad locomotives use and big power plants and so on. But anyway, typically it was around, this fuel would start to gel between 10 and 20 degrees. And first thing it does, it gets to what we call a cloud point, where you can't, you know, the fuel just gets kind of dirty looking. And then below that, the wax crystals start to form. And that's what plugs your filter, or in some cases, it plugs your fuel lines and blocks the fuel flow. So as they took the sulfur out, the paraffin, you know, as a part of that process, a lot of that is also removed. I've tested samples here and got them. The cloud point was below 10 degrees, between 5 and 10 degrees. Usually 5 degrees above it would be about where the cloud point was. Then it actually would be gelled not too much below that, so you could see the crystals form. And in some cases, in my samples, you know, it was actually getting pretty stiff.
Yeah. Boy, I never used to worry about it unless it was going to be at least 5 below 0, you know, 10 years ago. But nowadays, if it's going to be below 10 degrees, I really got to watch what I do.
Yeah, well, one of the problems is, and I'll just give you, for instance, today, this morning when I got up, it was almost 50 degrees here. The prediction is for 0 or below tonight.
Yep.
And that's pretty rapid change. So if we could get the temperature to change in increments and, you know, and put, you know, get it the way we wanted it, it'd be a lot easier to handle. But you have to kind of be, you know, predict what the worst that you think you're going to get into. And so you don't want to go buy 300 or 400 gallons of number one and then find out it's going to be 40 degrees. But on the other hand, you don't want to go untreated fuel and then find out it got to 10 below. So you do need to be kind of cautious. So if you're expecting, you know, the swing to get lower, at least treat the fuel, and you have to do it before the cloud point of the fuel. So you can't go out there in the morning and say, oh, crap, I forgot to treat my fuel, I'm going to pour something in here. It's not going to work. Depending on how your truck is set up, now mine, where I have the 12-volt fuel heater, even if I don't plug it in, you know, as soon as I turn the key on, it's going to get power to that the heater in the water separator and start heating the fuel. And then as it flows, you know, it'll keep that incoming fuel, you know, liquefy that if it's starting to gel and get fuel to go through the filter. So, and I haven't ever had a time when it gelled. And I did have trouble with some biodiesel that was off spec, and we had a real problem there where some of the glycerin didn't get processed out of the biodiesel. And so that stuff separated out when it was cold, and it was like Vaseline. So the filter, it plugged the filter almost immediately. And that was kind of ugly. But other than that, I haven't had the, on diesel fuel, I haven't had a gelling problem.
I have, like I believe you mentioned, you have a fuel pressure gauge. And, I mean, that's a lifesaver in the wintertime, because you see that drop, you know, long before you'll ever start losing power. Your filters are starting to plug, you know?
Yeah, Yeah. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, with all the newer stuff, newer electronic engines seem to flow a lot of fuel. So if you're going from, the south to the north, and it's continuously getting colder, I don't think you're going to have a problem until you stop.
My personal experience, that's the only time I've had trouble is, when the truck gets shut off and cools down. Even if, I've had straight number two in at 40 below and leave the truck idle overnight, it returns enough fuel to keep it warm.
I had that same experience, too. Well, something that I should mention, too, is that the filter isn't the only place you can have problem. And I don't know if you've ever been to a tavern where they serve cold beer, and they got a keg under the counter there. They don't have that keg in a big cooler. They got the beer flows through this little pipe, and it's cooled, as it flows through there before it comes out the tap. So,
called a cold plate.
Yeah. So what happens with your fuel is when it starts flowing through the fuel lines, and say the fuel line is, you get out there and it's, zero, and you look at your sample of fuel and you say, "Whew, man, it didn't gel. I'm lucky." And then you start the truck, and that cold fuel starts flowing through that fuel line that's cold. And it'll even get colder, and you'll have a problem. Another thing where problems occur is wherever there's a restriction in the fuel line. So say you got an elbow coming out of the tank, a lot of times it'll plug up there and never get to the filter, and consequently it'll never get to the fuel heater. I did address that on my trucks for running biodiesel by putting what is called a hot stick in the tank. And this particular unit replaces the fuel sender, so you don't have to drill another hole. You don't have to make another hole in it. And then the coolant runs through that and warms the fuel as it's drawn up from the tank. Now, I really did that for the biodiesel. I really don't even have to. I haven't ever had a problem on number two. But like I said, mine is set up with a whole bunch of redundant systems. That way, when the wife calls, it's cold somewhere, I can say, flip this switch or turn this valve or whatever, and you'll be okay.
Yeah. One other thing that I think is extremely simple for everybody to do and cheap, it's just something that adds a little ease to that morning where you might possibly have a problem, is I have shutoffs on all my return lines and all my suction lines so that on a really cold day, I can shut, I personally have three fuel tanks, but most people have two, shut one tank off and only try to heat up one tank at a time. So you get one tank good and hot fuel so you don't have an issue, and then you could crack the second one back open.
Well, and that's a very good system to have, because what you can do then is, say you're heading home and they say, we're going to have a, 40 below storm coming through or something. Well, you can shut your... You can shut your tanks off so you're only using one, and then you can put your blend, your higher, more expensive blend in one tank, and instead of buying, 300-400 gallons of it, you can put straight number one or a blend or treat it, in that one tank. So that's a good system to have too.
Yeah, because that, say I'm running home and I got half tanks of fuel because I got the 150s, and then I have an additional 100 gallon, but if I got half tanks of fuel, I can shut the return off on one and the suction off on the other, so it actually transfers my fuel. So I could run all the fuel that I got over to one tank, shut that off when I get to the fuel stop, and put 100 gallons of blended fuel in the tank that's empty, and then just run off that blended fuel for the really cold day.
Yes, so that's a good way to set up for being prepared. And on that kind of setup, you save enough on the fuel that you can, that you don't have to buy the expensive fuel, so you save enough money to pay for the modification there.
And,
but, you know, the other thing is then the less blend you run, the better mileage you get. So, save all around. And, you know, I mean, the main thing is you don't want to be going up and sitting on the road somewhere.
Yeah,
and I should mention here, if you're listening online and you want to call in, the number is 347-884-8327. And if you'd like to make a comment or talk about fuel or anything else, press 1 on your phone, and that'll put you in line here, and we'll be getting some of those calls here. So you have a block heater that you just plug the block heater in over the weekend or when you're home?
Yeah, I got the Tri-Pack APU too, so that, I mean, that'll run and pump water through, but yes, I also have the block heater. And I'll run them both, because the Tri-Pack will pump the fluid all the way through, and it's amazing how much warmer that engine is.
Okay, so your system is, you have, from your tank, you have the FAST system?
Yep, on the fuel, yep.
So you go from...
And the FAST system has the coolant line hooked to it. So that'll heat the, that's got the water separator, and then it's a hydraulic filter for separating out the air. And with my CAT engine, then there's that final filter on the pressure side, right on the side of the block, that's after the fuel pump.
Uh-huh. So, but yeah, you're able to... If you need to, you can. How do you decide when you turn on the water to the FAST system?
I got that on a manual valve, so if it's below 10 degrees, I'll turn it on for the first 2 hours of the morning, and after that, I'll pop the hood back open and shut it off. So I very rarely ever run that heater. And
well, yeah, you're doing pretty good then. There's another way that you can plumb that. So it'd be, see, the hot setup these days is a thermostatically controlled heater. You get in various different kinds. The in-tank heater is a really good option, because that way you heat the fuel and it flows in to the rest of the system where it doesn't have any problem. But if you just have, say your FAST and your heater, if it gels coming in one of the elbows or one of the lines or something, then you can't really do anything about that.
Yeah.
So, say the thing to do is watch what the big boys do and see what they do. I was looking at some Walmart trucks that were being sold on auction here recently, and they are, and I don't know what area of the country these came from. Could it be the Minnesota trucks, or they could be, I don't know where they come from, or maybe they spec them all like that. But these had in-tank heaters. I believe it was an Arctic Fox type thermostatic control on.
I don't know if you're hearing it on your end, but I'm getting a lot of background noise.
Yes, I am. I do hear it. I
don't know if that was my line or yours, but... I personally don't think the heating element that I got on the fast system is quite enough. On my older trucks, I had the tank heaters. This truck is an 01, and when I was specking it out, they were saying, you know, at that point, the engines were returning so much warm fuel that tank heaters weren't necessary. So I just decided not to put that spec on, and now I wish I would have.
I am hearing that that background noise. I don't know how try muting your phone lines. Go away. Sound like somebody got the window open.
Loose connection on your microphone or something to your computer or
I'll check it. Seems okay. We'll keep it going here, I guess, as long as we can hear each other.
Okay.
But, the need for the heating capacity is not like it was, before the electronic engines. Before that, you needed, a fair amount of, pretty good sized fuel heater to heat the fuel because you didn't get much return fuel to warm the fuel in the tank. So I think that's why responsible for a lot less problems on the road, just the way the trucks are built now. But for instance, with the Walmart, they can probably save a fortune just buying number two fuel and having their in-tank heater. So that probably you buy the heater once, and then you don't buy additives, you don't buy blenders. And they have their own. Now, I don't see them guys fueling anymore. I think they got their own supply of fuel for the most part. Shut your line off here once and see if that helps any. I'm still hearing it a little bit. Yeah, there it went away. Maybe it was you. The number is 347-884-8327. We were talking about winter fuels tonight. Any other fuel problems or questions you have, comments? We have a lot of calls on, but you have to punch one if you'd like to jump in, and I will answer your call there and then get you on. And it looks like we're going to go to 5769, and howdy, and you're on live.
Thank you for taking my call. Hey, I had a question about... quality of fuel. I run a dedicated run in Phoenix to Long Beach, so I've got two fuel stops that are pretty close in price, cheapest along that run. Is there anybody you know of that I can just take a sample out of the pump itself and mail it in to get a BTU on to find out who's got the best fuel? And I guess the other question is BTU the best way to figure out who has the best fuel?
That's
fuel economy fuel, you know what I'm saying? They'll give me the post.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. you can do that. I think the lab testing is fairly expensive for stuff like that. And the other problem is that, you know, say you take a sample and send it in, well, the next batch they get is probably going to vary some. So there should not be enough difference between areas to really make much difference. I think your best way to manage it is just to buy where you can get the best price on the fuel and buy straight number two if you can. You know, the blend, if you're running, you know, in that area, you probably don't get much of a blend. But if you got a blend, that really lowers the BTUs.
Yeah, no, we don't get any blends down here. And, they don't pay me enough to go up north or any place else, so.
Yeah, well,
I didn't know if there was any other way of being able to figure it out. I mean, I know with gasoline, some people say, well, either Chevron's better or what, you know, different brands of gas stations have a better quality fuel, so I didn't know if that was the case here, if they all, they all got the same stuff, and, you know, if there was any way of doing that, but I guess, like you said, they're getting different stuff every time. There's no way of doing that, unless, you know, you could do it at a cheap rate or through, I don't know, Polaris Labs or one of the lab companies did it at a fairly reasonable rate.
Well, they do it. I don't know what the cost is. I haven't done any of those for a long time. You know, you can buy a test kit for, they used to be around $150, and you could actually test a lot of the properties of the fuel. And that would give you some idea. But the problem, you know, the fuel is refined and it's in a certain range, you know, it has to be within a certain range. But let's say the refinery on the East Coast might be a little lower than the one on the West Coast, but they're within the range of, for instance, like the cetane value has to be a certain amount, the BTU content is supposed to be a certain amount, the sulfur has to be below a certain amount, those kind of things. So generally, the refineries get it tweaked going through their refinery. They get the qualities they want. And a lot of times, certain brands will put in an additive to enhance a certain thing, like maybe to give it a better cetane value or better lubricity or something, and a lot of times those will help you get better mileage. So it does happen if you got one brand of fuel at one place, you might get a little better mileage than another place. But and I guess the way the fuel is handled is where I guess it doesn't really strike me as being. I mean, the fuel, it's kind of like a distillation process, so it's really pretty pure when it goes through the refinery. But then as it goes through all the handling before you get to pump it in your tank is where it picks up all the contamination. And that's, it's part of the system. You can't really, I wish they would handle it. You know, I always thought they should be really careful with the fuel I wanted because I want it clean, but it doesn't seem to matter.
Okay. Is there any way of testing for black algae and that kind of stuff? And as I've been told, there's kind of a station that's been blackballed from our company. We've told them not to fuel there and lose your job if you fuel there because they think that that's where we're picking up black algae. Is there a way of testing that at Stalfield that take a sample of that?
I don't know for sure on that. You usually, if you have it, if you have enough to make a difference, you'll find it in your filter. And if you're, you know, if you have a problem, just if you have a spin-on filter, just cut it open, and it's pretty easy to identify that stuff.
Right.
If you have
but the
a
problem
gap,
is, the problem is that fuel station is about 5 cents a gallon cheaper than any place else. So if I could prove that the fuel that's coming out of that fuel station does not have algae in it, I'd buy it from there because I could save quite a bit of money over the course of a year. But I don't want to lose my, you know, my contract because of it, because, you know, they don't want us, you know, getting bad fuel, you know, causing problems with our trucks. So I just didn't know if there was a way of sampling that fuel, you know, we send it in, and, you know, I mean, I know it's fuel cleaning. I mean, I can test for algae right there in my water. I didn't know if there was a way of testing the actual fuel to see if the algae was in the fuel before we put it in our tanks.
Well, that might be. It would be something to ask the lab, but they could probably detect it if it's in the fuel. But the thing, like when you put it in your tank, if you don't have any water in the tank, that stuff is not going to grow. So it may be, you know, the cleanliness of the fuel that you get. I don't know.
So you're saying it's impossible to get black algae if you have a FAS system? Because the FAS system pulls the water out, is that correct?
Well, there's many... Well, there's many types of water separators that will take the water out. But, see, you could have some water floating around from condensation in the bottom of your tank that doesn't really get picked up and go to the filter because you don't draw the tank, you know, clear to the very last little bit. So in that situation, I think the way I would do it, and, you know, and I guess I would call the lab and see if they could give you a definite test on a sample of it. But I think the way I would do it is by you know, fuel in there, and, you know, like change your filter, and then buy fuel there and see if it, you know, you get more contamination, because it definitely is a problem with poor housekeeping in the fuel, you know, the fuel delivery system. But, well, let me just tell you how this works, because this just shocks me, but this is the way it is. They refine this fuel and they put it in a great big old, you know, container. And then it gets distributed through a pipeline that goes to a, you know, terminal somewhere, 2-3 states away or half a country away, whatever. Well, thing is, that same place makes agricultural fertilizer and gasoline and other things like that, and this all goes through the same pipeline. But the thing is, they don't let it mix. They say, not to worry, we're not going to let that fertilizer mix in your fuel. We put a slug of water in between the two, so no problem. So now there's several things I just don't want in my diesel fuel. And one of them is gasoline, and another one is water, and another one is fertilizer. So, but somewhere on the end of that pipeline, you know, where it comes out, they got to separate that 500 gallons of water from the fuel that's coming through. So that's how we end up with, you know, a lot of this crap we don't want in our fuel. And so the ideal thing is to have the pump where you're pumping fuel into your tank has a filter on it and takes the contamination and the water and whatever else out before you put it in your tank. But not all stations have that, and not everybody is, you know, I mean, some are just a lot cleaner than others. So I don't know, but the best thing to do on your truck is have some kind of a separator on there that'll take the water out, and maybe be a primary stage of filtration. That way you can get contamination out in the water out before it ever gets to your fuel system and does damage. So that's the best way to do it. So even if you get some fuel that's not quite as nice as you want, you got a way to deal with it.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
You betcha. Well, good luck with that. And, you know, I'd like to hear back if you do send a sample. I'll call the lab when I get a chance. I've never really asked that, so I'll check into that and see what they know. And I think Kevin has been talking to some of them guys, and he probably has a little more information on that, too. Okay. Well, looks like we got another hand up here, so we'll go to another call for 5382. It's your turn here. You're live on now.
Hey, Eldon, it's Dale. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I've got a question. Do you know if the extreme cold that I run in kills the algae?
There is. Yeah, I think it's cold that the stuff has trouble, you know, a lot more trouble growing in. And in the warmer climate, you know, where it's damp and a little more nicer to live in, I guess, is where the stuff can live and grow. So, yeah, it does. It does sort of keep that, you know, from growing as fast. I think it still can do it just because you've got fuel, you know, warm fuel flowing in there all the time.
I was curious since I run from, you know, the extreme colds out of Canada down into LA, so you know I'm kind of at one end of the scale to the other in a trip, and I'm just curious if you know the cold would kind of do whatever growth takes place in, you know, while a truck's sitting you know in Canada.
Well, I think the best time to treat it is when the fuel is cold, that it's a little more effective. But in now, do you know what you get for fuel in Canada?
Well, it's a blend, and they actually adjust the blend according to the temperature. So, you know, in the extreme cold, I've seen it where we've been one grade away from kerosene out in the prairies.
And so you don't, they don't, do you got a choice there of what you buy, or is it all just one?
It's all blended. We the refineries, you know, try and stay on top of the weather, and then fuel is blended accordingly.
Well, I thought that it was all treated out of the refinery down here, but after when I was calling around today, they don't. If the customer wants an additive in the fuel, then they put it in when they load the truck to go out to deliver it. So they don't treat everything. So you know they want. It's, I guess, pretty competitive type of thing, so they don't want to spend any more on it than they have to.
Yeah. Do you know, I'm not sure about the northern states like Montana, the Dakotas. Do they just blend their fuel, or are you either buying number one or number two?
I haven't ran that much. I was in Minnesota one time, and they did have a choice of straight number one or a blend. There was no straight number two there, but just from my local truck stops, there's a difference in 50 miles. They're all different. So, and you know, I didn't really want to plug this, but if you're coming through Interstate 80 on, and you need fuel, the Shoemakers in Lincoln, Nebraska is the only one that treats the fuel, and they don't jack up the price. And they actually had the lower pump price than the other stations, and they also offered a blend, you know, or whatever if you want it. But their straight number two was,
okay.
They just paid the extra for the treatment. But I also know, I also have a friend in Alaska, and they all they have there is jet fuel, which is,
yeah.
you know, more or less kerosene. I couldn't ever get a hold of anybody to try and get the BTU content, but I know it's in somewhere around 135,000 BTUs, so you lose a fair amount of energy output in that. And but
well,
they get some extreme temperatures there, so they don't have any gelling problems either.
Yeah. I feel so cheated. Al Gore promised me global warming, and it's just not happening.
Yeah. Well,
apparently Al has...
It's coming. There's going to be a lot of hot air with the CSA 2010 and the Howard's service and all that. We're going to have a lot of hot air moving your way here real soon.
Well, there you go. Well, thanks for taking my call, Al. Have a great night.
Well, thanks for checking in, Dale, and we'll get on to the next call here. Looks like 8699 is up again. And go for it.
Okay. I just had a comment on what Dale just said there with Al Gore. Maybe it's that Al Gore actually finally made the difference. Now he's got everybody on the straight and narrow, so we got no more warm weather. But... yeah, it as far as the northern states, in North Dakota and, all around up there, it's really a hit and miss nowadays. Unless you run through there regularly to know the spots that do have straight number one, some of them are just a blend, some are straight number two, and unless you're calling ahead, you really don't know.
Well, part of the problem is, when you call the truck stop, the girl behind the desk don't really know what a blend is or what treat it is or what any of that means. So that's one problem. And I guess around here I was surprised that it varied as much as it did. That takes time to call a few more places. I don't typically buy much fuel around where I live. Here lately, I buy a lot in Oklahoma. It's not treated there, and that's what I'm looking for. So, it definitely varies, and it's not treated. I thought it was treated out of the refinery, but that's not true. So, if the tank wagon, if some farmer wants his fuel, 70-30 or whatever, they'll mix it that way, and then whatever additive you want. They don't really have a... I think what happens is when somebody starts having trouble, then they start worrying about the blending, what they have.
Yeah. I don't know if that's my line again, but they put me back on hold.
Thank you. a 40-hour week for a living. Sad as it may seem, trying to move up a ladder of success, live out an American dream. Get a small paycheck for your trouble, not much to enjoy. You can climb on up in a semi-truck, see the world in a big boy's toy. In the cab of an 18-wheeler, you're the lifeblood of the land, with the heartbeat of America in the palm of your hand. You take a lot of pride in what you drive, make a difference, it's your choice. It's the world through the eyes of a trucker, in the cab of a big boy's toy. Keep your eyes on the highway as you roll across the land. If anybody ever gets in trouble, you're the first to lend a helping hand. Once you get a load to deliver, make sure it gets through. I'd like to say we appreciate everything you do. In the cab of an 18-wheeler, you're the lifeblood of the land, with the heartbeat of America in the palms of your hand. Take a lot of pride in what you drive, make a difference, it's your choice. It's the world through the eyes of a trucker, in the cab of a big boy's toy. Nothing goes on without you, everything slows down to a crawl. There's a whole lot of dreams and promises, every load you haul. In the cab of an 18-wheeler, you're the lifeblood of the land, with the heartbeat of America in the palms of your hand. Take a lot of pride in what you drive, make a difference, it's your choice. It's the world through the eyes of a trucker, in the cab of a big boy's toy. Take a lot of pride in what you drive, make a difference, it's your choice. It's the world through the eyes of a trucker, in the cab of a big boy's toy. It's the world through the eyes of a trucker, in the cab. I'm a big boy's car.
Hey, that was pretty cool. There, we're back on. I think I was having some technical problems there. Matt, are you still on the call here?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Did that music come through okay?
Yep.
Okie doke. Yeah,
whatever
lost
you
my
did, fix it, because it sounds good now.
Yeah. Must have had a little shaky connection there. Well, we're about out of time, so I want to thank everybody for joining in tonight. And I did want to mention, if you want to get in on the raffle for the CMC and a couple other raffles we got going, get over to the LetsTruckChristmas.com site, and we'll be pulling the winners on Saturday on Kevin's live show. And with that, I'm going to sign off and say goodnight, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
Wheels on the highway, hauling them a heavy load, jamming gears in the left lane in a truck everybody knows. Running hammer down just to hammer out a living, buy the kids what they need. There's one thing that's a little different, there's a lady sitting in the driver's seat, and the kids start crying and mama just trying to hold everything in place. Maybe earn a buck in the cab of this truck with the tears rolling down her face. She's trying to earn a living and she keeps on giving up everything it takes to leave. I've got to say that my hat's off to the lady sitting in the driver's seat. counting and adding more every day. She quit counting all the things she's missed every moment she's away. Flat out on the highway, trying to make it back home. She can start kissing all the things she's missed every minute since she's been gone. And the kids start crying and mama just trying to hold everything in place. Maybe earn a buck in the cab of this truck with the tears rolling down her face. Trying to earn a living and she knows she's giving up everything and hates to leave. I've got to say that my hat's off to the lady sitting in the driver's seat. On giving up everything and hates to leave. I got to say that my hat's off to the lady sits in the driver's seat. I've got to say that my hat's off to the lady sitting in the driver's seat.
Our friend Terry Woolley. And with that, I'm going to sign off and we'll catch you all next time.